You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program tonight, or today, Donald Trump to give a speech on budget priorities. It will be all bullshit. I don't really know how else to tell you that. It's going to be completely meaningless, what he says. Maybe funny, but it's going to be meaningless. Meanwhile, is Obama pulling the strings of protests and leakers?
Alhamdulillah.
ICE agents gone wild. This is just the beginning. And that drip, drip, drip continues to drip. On Manafort, Page, Sater. And as the House and Senate Intel committees become compromised, the clock is ticking on the ACA repeal and replace as pressure grows on Republicans. And in the Trump dump today, dirty water and private federal prisons are back. Meanwhile, Bannon's deconstruction of the administrative state. Moving forward, Trump's budget looks to cut 25%. Well, to be honest, 24% of the EPA, 14% of the IRS. Meanwhile, Wilbur Ross confirmed as Commerce Secretary with 21 Democratic votes. Ross is also newly reported has an interesting relationship with some Russian bankers. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is a pleasure to be back here. Oh, God. I just saw this. Kyle just sent me an emergency reading, and it is a picture of, it includes a picture of, which I think is undoctored, of Alex Jones, topless, eating breakfast.
Being a man?
I'll have to get to that later. I don't. No, I don't. I'll have to get to that later. So a lot of things to talk about, obviously, catching up on vacation. Multiple big stories. Obviously, we no longer have Milo Yiannopoulos to kick around anymore. He's so dangerous.
That
he's had to move to a completely different realm of dangertude and is going to have to be dangerous in a completely different plane of existence. I'm not going to spend any more time on him. We'll wait for his second act where he comes back with a slightly different hair color. My guess is what he's going to do is dye it blue and then come back as something. You know, I who knows? Maybe there's a self-help guru thing there. I don't know. But a bigger story, at least in these parts, and I want to get to what's happening with ICE agents around the country because it's repulsive, and it's going to get worse. We've just empowered what turns out, and I think we sort of had awareness before. I mean, you could tell this in terms of what the ICE union, this is the immigration, essentially police force. There was indications when their union supported Trump in the run-up to the election, but I think we're going to become more and more aware of just how sort of reactionary force this is. But before we get there, let's talk about the DNC election. Briefly, I mean, we didn't cover this with the level of specificity I think that a lot of people did in the run-up, because, I mean, you're talking about 445 voters, 447 voters, I guess, of Democratic Party operatives, more or less, some who are now lobbyists and former electeds. And obviously we talked about Tom Perez's entrance into the race, which was largely a push rather than a sort of a jump into the race from the Obama administration. Clearly they wanted their guy in there. Now, when you talk about the politics, the political differences between Perez and Ellison, you're not necessarily talking about a wide gulf on policies that they have taken positions on to the extent that they would take public positions on the same things. Perez obviously was a supporter of the TPP. One could argue, I guess, that, you know, he was so because he was part of the Obama administration. But putting aside the differences in the politics and the individuals, Perez had not a significant amount of electoral experience. I think he had run for local office in Maryland at one point. And I don't know how much administrative experience Ellison has, and it's largely administrative position. All of that, to me, was largely irrelevant. It is a position like this. What is important about it is access to resources. It is far less about that individual who sits atop there than the people they would hire and the wells in which they draw upon in terms of personnel. And Ellison's people would have come from a far more progressive leftist wing of the Democratic Party. I mean, I think that without a doubt, we know this just because the reporting is pretty clear, and there was certainly, like, you know, some boasting afterwards that Perez was chosen to run for the DNC chair because he was so closely aligned with the Obama people. And there's two ways you can look at this, but simultaneously. They're not mutually exclusive. One is, you want someone who comes from the more progressive left part of the Democratic Party because of the personnel they're going to put in there are going to be more reflective of left-wing positions. And also, you know, I don't know if the people that Ellison would have populated the DNC with in terms of staff would be great at rebuilding the Democratic Party. But I do know that the Obama administration, regardless of what you think about their policies and what they did in office, was uniquely bad at building the Democratic Party, as measured by really the only metric that counts, and that is how many elected Democrats you have across the country. I mean, that to me seems like a particularly uncontroversial statement. So it's unfortunate in that respect. But there was a great piece by Nikki Saval, who I feel like we had on this program. I can't remember exactly in what. In N Plus Magazine, nplusmag.com. About this race. And I just want to read a couple of portions of it. I mean, I think his assessment of the Democrats. I mean, it's really, it was an odd vote, right? I mean, I think there's reporting that suggests all the anti-Muslim smears of Ellison, which came in the form of he's anti-Semitic, seem to have had at least some traction. I don't know if that accounted for 45 votes. I wonder if people actually vote for Ellison just with the hopes of getting Alan Dershowitz out of the Democratic Party. But he writes, nothing appears to scare Democrats more than energy and debate. And I think this is true. Because, and we've seen this for years. I mean, look, this is nothing new. During the Bush years, the same thing. You know, if there was anybody, any writer with any measure of passion, they were necessarily disregarded. If there was any, I mean, look, Howard Dean, not particularly liberal, but basically was killed off in the Democratic Party because he screamed on stage. Right? I mean, honestly, that's what sunk his candidacy. And that passion runs contrary to the sort of measured wonkiness and managerial qualities that establishment Democrats cling to. The fact that most social movements were behind Ellison was a source of genuine terror for a party still somehow convinced that if it were not for the FBI and the Russians, they would be in serene command of the nation's major institutions. Now, I think to a certain extent, it's quite possible if it were not for the FBI, that Clinton would have eked it out. I think there still would have been a problem within the Democratic Party. For the movements themselves, however, there is a strategic question. We find ourselves in that cyclical, even farcical left-wing position of confronting the Democratic Party as such. More prosaically, was it wise to invest so much psychic energy in the contest for DNC chair? I'm skipping around here a little bit. And then he points to an interview that Marshall Ganz gave at the Talking Points memo. And Ganz, who is a Harvard professor and has written and been a part of many social movements, said that the DNC is not and should not be the main avenue for the left. For one thing, the rise of conservative movement didn't happen through the RNC. And this, to me, seems self-evident. Which is not to say that you should create another party. It is to say that you build power and then use it to take over the Democratic Party, because the vehicle exists there. And if you're only 45 votes away from putting Keith Ellison now, you know, where will you be down the road? Conservatives successfully, this is according to Ganz, successfully created a more or less coherent network of organizations linked to local, state, and national politics, which is a traditional form of effective political organization in the U.S. You look in vain for something like that on the progressive side. There's such a proliferation of groups, all kinds of groups, some of which take up space without filling it. Now, there's a couple of things that you got to consider when you consider this quote. One is there was a lot of resources for the conservatives to create a coherent network, like the Koch network. I mean, they're dumping hundreds of millions of dollars into these things. You had the AFP, on the rise of the Tea Party, you had the AFP, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Koch brothers, in every single state, basically running a parallel organization to the DNC. Reince Priebus was an AFP operative. Scott Walker got a lot of his support from the AFP. There's money out there. You're actually building a professional organization. The Koch brothers reportedly have a better voter file than the RNC. You're not going to get that kind of money on the left, but you can make up for it with an enthusiasm. And, you know, when you see things like Indivisible and Our Revolution and just organic organizing that has yet to sort of get to that point where there's things are starting to get networked, it's encouraging. Now, a lot of those things aren't necessarily left politics yet. You know, a lot of them are anti-Trump. But Saval goes on to say, in other words, the outcome of the DNC contest is as much evidence of the left's institutional weakness as of the party's immovability. I don't think that can be emphasized enough. So, you know, sadly, where we're at least in terms of taking over the Democratic Party. Now, with that, let me just qualify. Well, we are more or less where we would have been if Hillary Clinton had won the election, appointed whoever it was, I don't know, Jennifer Palmieri. I have no idea who it would have been, but God forbid. And it's just a question of building that power. Let me just qualify that statement with saying the fact that they had to put Perez out there to stop Ellison is an indication of some power, right? It wasn't Terry McAuliffe, part two, coming in there. And there's a gulf between Tom Perez and Terry McAuliffe. So, I mean, there's some movement, but Saval goes on to write, the sheer numbers in the streets and even the millions of primary votes for Sanders are not signs of achievement, but of incipience. So we're just at the beginning, folks. There are still millions more disengaged, electorally non-participating, unattached to party, most of them among the most vulnerable populations in society. This is the working class the media and political organizations should be concerned about, a group that may be more susceptible to movement building around issues like police and schools and workplaces than, for the moment anyway, questions of party. They remain a vital constituency for a left clearly finding its feet. I mean, this is going to be the challenge on the left because, you know, we just had this election that took place in Delaware, a state Senate special election. It was just 3 days ago, Saturday. The Democrat won, and incidentally, this election had the state legislatures, I think you get to 2/3, right? If Delaware had gone Republican, you get close to 2/3, which is a problem. Not just in sheer numbers, but also like literally a constitutional convention type of problem. In an off-year special election, candidate, I guess her name was Hansen, won over 1,000 more votes than the Democratic candidate garnered in the 2014 general election. So, now, I don't think all those people who are coming out there are, like, coming out because they are motivated for things like free college and whatnot, necessarily. I think they're coming out there because they're anti-Republican, which is fine. Because we're going to need that, too. Because, again, the more Republicans win, the less empowered the left is. I know that bears repeating because some people still can't seem to get that through their head. People are tweeting at me like, see, Ellison lost. It proves that Jimmy Dore was right. What?
I've gotten a lot of those too.
It's shocking. You see, the left is not the whole point. I'm not going to say that 2020. I'm not going to say that.
Hat. Did.
But
somebody bought the URL stein20-20.com and it redirects to Majority.
I love it. They couldn't get the full 2020 though?
I don't know.
Somebody else must have taken that. She's running again.
It was her husband.
Nina Turner had a good tweet. She said, "Never put all your faith in any one person or organization. Blind loyalty hurts your vision. Persevere, be purpose driven, and push hard." And
sell out. Just total pawn of the establishment.
The real problem was that guy, Sam Ronan, didn't get the head of the DNC.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, I think they proved. And, you know, the amazing thing is that if Sam Ronan had been elected, then both Pence and Trump would have been removed from office within
Indeed.
6 months. But the DNC is so corrupt, they don't care. And they want war with Russia, which is top of Perez's agenda.
All right, let me just read this, and then I want to talk about these ICE stories. Because, and we'll preview Trump's speech tonight. But, I mean, I can tell you, here's the preview. I'm fantastic. Everything's great. We're going to more military.
More military.
Not going to cut
Not gonna lose
things
anymore.
If we do, maybe, could be, repeal ACA.
But maybe not.
Like the idea I heard before, and America.
I heard another idea that was also great. The only thing I watch Trump speeches for now is I'm like, I wonder how, what is it, Cernovitz? I wonder how he's going to cut this.
Right.
That's like literally the only thing I watch for anymore.
Here's the thing people have to understand about what he's going to say tonight. They are so rudderless in that White House. And the dynamic is shaping up like this, that not only is there, I think, obviously palpable concern. And look, I don't care about Russia right now for the sake of also, you know, now that I've, you know, had a week off and has been able to sort of regenerate other than my constant tweeting. I just make this absolutely clear. If there was a half a dozen people more in Trump's orbit who all had ties to, let's say, Exxon, okay? There's one, but let's say they all had ties to Exxon, and Exxon was engaged in a huge secretive deal for billions of dollars. And Donald Trump is like weirdly anti-Gulf oil and anti-BP oil. And just like, but Exxon, I love their logo.
BP.
I love their,
I'm BP's stable. Horrible. BP is the worst. Rex Tillerson and I are stable mates
and
in
like
a certain sense.
All these things around there, I'd be like, there's something going on here. There's a problem. And there's some type, you know, like.
And there's all sorts of weird people that maybe invested in bizarre real estate deals that were involved with Exxon.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I mean, I would be, we would have the same issue. And yes, Exxon probably spent, you know, ads saying that Hillary Clinton is bad in the, you know, in the, okay, fine. Like, it's not promoting. I mean, do I think that there are people who are inflating Putin as some type of like demonic? And Putin himself may be a horrible human being. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's very well established that he is a bad guy.
But this
bad hombre
promoting Russia as some type of like vast threat to us. Do I think people are doing that? Yes. That's called politics. In other words, like, we have got to drum up how bad Putin is so that it will force the hand of Republicans to investigate what is clearly something. And I think it's at the end of the day, it's not going to be that Donald Trump was sent over here, you know, like the Americans. He's not going to show up in, this new season, which is starting.
Definitely
and
it's gonna, not.
Hey, guys, don't worry. I'm a secret agent and you two are great. And I've got a great apartment for you if you ever want to move out of it.
And
there's an FBI agent living across the street from you.
The best ending of that show imaginable.
That'd be amazing. Like, the son turns into like he just like the takes Donald just, Trump's identity like, or something.
It's gonna be great. We're gonna do oil deals. By the way, this whole communism thing done.
I think at the end of this, it's just going to be turned out that like this Carter Page, like where the F did this dude come from?
No, I mean he was at Merrill in Moscow.
I know somebody who has a friend who was involved in Gazprom.
Yeah,
and Carter Page was in that universe.
Yeah.
Of now, how he ended up as one of five foreign policy advisors on the Trump campaign, all of these questions, there's going to be an answer at the end of it, I think, that is going to deal with money.
And they've been doing, they just use this as an instrument of their foreign policy. If you read Steve Cole's book on Exxon, actually, ironically, Putin tried to get Bush's, I think his name was Don Evans, Treasury Secretary. He's like, you want to come over here? And it might have been Gazprom.
Commerce Secretary.
Commerce. He invited him. It's like, you want to come run one of our major oil companies? And Evans declined, and Putin joked. He was like, you wouldn't even need a CIA if you took that job.
Right.
Right? So I think there's strong and weak arguments on both sides. Like, there's the people who inflate Russia, and then there's people who I think are just expressing valid concerns, and then like Marcy Wheeler. And then there's people, I think, on the flip side who deny that there's anything there, which is stupid. And then people like Bhaskar who would say, there's a whole universe of hacks that only want to talk about Russia because they don't want to talk about their failures.
Right. Of course. Well, but when you cross that line about Russia's implications on the election,
right.
I mean, I understand why that's in there because that is just jingoistic politic talk. But there's also a significant problem that you may have a president or an administration that is operating and driving fairly significant foreign policy decisions. And I don't know that necessarily it's a bad thing to get more allied with Russia. I don't know.
I think it is if it's in the Dan Dicker sense.
The point is, it's a separate conversation. Donald Trump does not have a thought out foreign policy agenda, nor does anyone in the administration, I would argue, that involves a geopolitical plan. Maybe Bannon does, and that is apocalyptic, I think, on some level. That it's clearly being driven by self-enrichment on some level. And I think that's a perfectly valid thing to pursue just in a vacuum, but in terms of politics, yeah, of course. And fine. The organizing that the left has to do can happen in parallel to this. And there's so much energy spent on like complaining about hacks, talking about this stuff as if it's going to lead, there was a story that a guy wrote in the Atlantic magazine when Air America first launched in like 2005. And they were like, the left better watch out because you don't want Air America turning into Rush Limbaugh because you can see how it's driven that party into the ground. Now, aside from the guy's misunderstanding of what was happening on the right. Like, to take that time in 2005 to say the left has to worry about the ascendancy of Air America Radio is absurd. And so isn't the idea that we got to be careful or we're going to get into a shooting war with Russia. I don't think that's a danger. I don't think there is a... I don't think I would put that on the highest or even the secondary. If there was a tertiary level of fears that I have about what's going to happen in this country, it would not be that there's going to be a sudden wave of anti-Russia, of huge anti-Russian sentiment that is going to be markedly different from where it's ever been.
But that was where the but that goes back to this notion that Hillary was going to attack Russia on day one. I mean, there is a certain part of like dumb left that has gotten really invested in that idea.
Well, I guess that's where it comes.
No,
from,
that's what it is.
All absolutely. Right, so I've gotten off track here, but this deserves. Do we have the statement from Betsy DeVos? Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder that the federal government does a lot of things besides, you know, keep you awake at night because of who their president is. Statement from Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos following a listening session with historically black college and university leaders. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos released the following statement after a meeting with presidents and chancellors of historically black colleges and universities at White House. I will skip the key priority for this administration to develop opportunities for communities that are often most undeserved. I will go directly to historically black colleges and university, HBCUs, have done this since their founding. That is, develop opportunities for communities that are often the most underserved. They started from the fact, she's speaking now about historically black colleges and universities.
Yes.
They started from the fact that there were too many students in America who did not have equal access to education. They saw that the system wasn't working. That was an absence of opportunity.
The teachers'
union. So they took
it
upon themselves to provide the solution. HBCUs are real pioneers when it comes to school choice. They are living proof that when more options are provided to students, they are afforded greater access and greater quality. Their success has shown that more options help students flourish. Now, for those of you who are not aware, and I'm speaking specifically to those of you who are probably in middle school or elementary school, and if you are listening to today's show, I'm sorry I started off with a curse word. Historically black colleges, the reason why they're called historically black colleges is because they were started some time ago, like around Reconstruction. And apparently Wikipedia is blocked at the Secretary of Education. But let me just read a paragraph from it. In 1862, the federal government's Morrill Act, not moral, but M-O-R-R-I-L-L, Act, provided for land-grant colleges in each state. Some educational institutions in the North or West were open to blacks before the Civil War. And because you're in elementary school, well, you should know, it's 1865. But 17 states, mostly in the South, had segregated systems and generally excluded black students from their land-grant colleges. In response, Congress passed the Second Morrill Act of 1890, also known as the Agricultural College Act of 1890, requiring states to establish a separate land grant for a college for blacks if blacks were being excluded from the existing land grant college. Many of the HBCUs were founded by states to satisfy the Second Morrill Act. In other words, the federal government provided money and required under the Agricultural Act of 1890 to open black universities if you were not allowing black students into your universities through the first grant for colleges. It's not a question of choice because they didn't have a choice. In fact, these colleges existed because there was no choice. So they're not the real pioneers when it comes to school choice.
Jim Crow led to a lot of innovation. But the school teachers' unions, on the other hand...
It wasn't that these black colleges realized that the system wasn't working and they decided to open their own. It was the federal government realized that states, particularly southern ones, were basically refusing to provide for the education of a large segment of their population. And so they gave federal money for it. So, I mean, aside from the incredible ignorance associated with this, and then aside from the attempt to pigeonhole her voucher system and graft it onto a historical example of the federal government, why, when you talk about states' rights, you're talking about the right to discriminate and the federal government's role in mitigating or attempting to eliminate states' racial discrimination. Aside from that, she also misses one of the primary justifications for having a federal Department of Education to ensure that public schools are operating well in every state, because the states drop the ball, sometimes on purpose, sometimes just because they don't have the money.
That was like one of the calls we used to get in a press release.
That's unbelievable.
It was basically like they just saw a market opening for... getting their own schools.
Exactly.
They innovated their way out of apartheid. What's your problem with that?
It was completely disruptive.
If we kept doing that, then those kids probably have jetpacks and fucking tablets in every house, and black people would be the richest people in the history of the earth. But, you know, the government came along, instituted desegregation, got rid of Jim Crow, and now you got all sorts of poverty and problems, man.
There it
Hopefully,
is.
Hopefully Betsy DeVos will fix it. Imagine if you reinstated Jim Crow, the amount of
wealth. She can't hire somebody. Like, she can't even find, like, the problem is the only historian.
Every answer is no.
The only historians she knows about her are just like, oh, my specialty was actually late antiquity. I just know the parts about from when.
Specialty late antiquity.
Igon was born of a, to the point where John dipped that dude in the water. And those are my.
I have a degree from Glenn Beck University, and I am Betsy DeVos's special advisor on
Everyone
empowerment
on her staff
opportunities.
Just came from the Creationist Museum for their
Did you see the
PhD.
Clip that we played yesterday of her, where she was at CPAC? And in most things we've seen of her, she's being, you know, completely hapless, ill-informed, and kind of like vaguely nice in an oddly disturbing way. And she goes to CPAC, and she goes, I'm a mom. I'm a... You know, basically, I'm a mom,
life partner,
which was an interesting choice of words. And the person who told Bernie Sanders to his face that there's no such thing as a free lunch,
and billionaire since birth, right?
That, right, literally, like one of the biggest trust fund babies in the history of humankind, saying like
babies,
adults.
Not kids, right? In other words, like she didn't just. She, yes. From day one.
She has a free life.
Wait, I don't, you didn't mention this either, Michael, yesterday, but the reason why I now want to also punch her along with with Nazis is that there is such a thing as free lunch. Millions of kids depend on it not to starve to death in this country, and she's in charge of the Department of Education that provides those free
lunches.
But
they would feel
a
lot
better. It is literally the only meal that millions of kids in the country eat every day.
I think they would feel a lot better if they had their own lunch packed for them by their parents. So.
The school lunch programs, however, I think are through the USDA.
Yeah.
But.
Well, let's fucking hope so, because.
Let's hope so that Mike, what is that guy, Sonny Perdue, can be like, oh, I think we should still feed the kids something. There's some off-brand industrial rice from Cargill that we could reformulate.
We got some new pâtés made out of corn syrup.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but the point
being, and also in the poorest areas of the country, and I read a few articles on this. Some of my friends are teachers, just like everyone else, and you know, they've taught in places where the school district was extremely reluctant to cancel school because the kids wouldn't be able to eat. They had breakfast programs and lunch programs, and that was all those kids were going to be able to get. And, you know, some kids would get free lunch, some would get discounted lunch depending on income, and that has been, like, I think since, like, FDR. And I just hate her so much. I am so angry, and I want to cry about immigration too. But also, can I?
Well, I'll give you a chance.
I'm gonna cry. I know it's the one thing where I can't stop. No, the immigration. Well, I'm really angry about a lot of stuff, but immigration just makes me cry. Okay, but can I just say
somebody needed 10 days of vacation? I think.
Yeah, man. But
emotions make Sam very
this is uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable.
Sam's like, I don't know. I see it. The only tears I like is when I make them for someone because I say something clever. But besides that.
Yeah, I'm well aware that tears make Sam. He's my boss.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, my God. You need to keep crying.
Okay. No, okay, but. There was just a small thing I wanted to say is that the reason that they're called historically black colleges is that they are no longer exclusively African American.
Right.
That's Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
Okay. all right, let's talk about Ice Agents and see if we can. All right, and then we got a lot of sound to play in the fun half. All right, I just wanted to there's been a couple of stories. I think people have seen them about ICE agents, but basically, they're loving it right now because under the Obama administration, they were basically shackled. In fact, I think there have been some spokespeople who have said they've unshackled ICE agents. You remember when they unshackled people those people who are holding prisoners in Iraq, right? They unshackled them. We saw what happened there. In Virginia, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents waited outside a church shelter where undocumented immigrants had gone to stay warm. In Texas and in Colorado, agents went into courthouses looking for foreigners who had arrived for hearings on other matters. At Kennedy International Airport, passengers arriving after a five-hour flight from San Francisco, still in the United States, were asked to show their documents before they were allowed to get off the plane. I've done some reading on this, and from what I've read, that's not kosher. ICE agents do have the ability, and customs officials do have the ability to ask for documentation of people coming from a flight outside of the country. But on a domestic flight, you don't have the ability to do that. They need a warrant. So if anybody asks you for your papers as you're disembarking a plane,
mm-hmm.
tell them to suck it. Or you can just say politely, no.
And suck it.
Gone are, this is from the New York Times, the Obama-era rules that required ICE agents to focus only on serious criminals. In other words, as you know, during the Obama administration, which did deport a record number of people, records, of course, are there to be broken, But what they did do was say to ICE agents, only serious felons. Not misdemeanors, not past felony convictions that may not be violent. And I'll get to an example of that in a moment. Before, we used to be told, you can't arrest those people. And we'd be disciplined for being insubordinate if we did, said a 10-year veteran of the agency who took part in the operation. Now those people are priorities again. And there's a lot of them here.
These guys are sociopaths.
So, in other words, ICE agents are excited because they get softer targets. Right? You don't have
to
go after...
Think of how much easier it is to do this.
Of course. You don't have to go after the violent criminals. You can go after the guy who had a parking ticket. You can go after the guy who had a DUI.
You go after the woman, apparently, who went to... was walking out of court. They're filing a restraining order against an abusive boyfriend.
Yep.
And this is...
And they lied about this.
And they lied.
And they said
right.
that they had got her outside the courthouse when she got onto public ground. But in fact, there's video of two ICE agents in a waiting room waiting for her to get out of court. They physically grabbed her as she walked out of the court. They walked her out of the courthouse. Was this in Utah, I think it was?
Yeah,
and
I believe so.
Walked her across the plaza and then put her in a car.
And you know, and of course, who tipped them off?
It was the domestic abuser.
The guy who abused her. And I think, I mean, and I listened to a lawyer, I will give to Reagan on his podcast, and he said, you know, this is a really hard thing because you tell people that you're dealing with, like, if you think you're in physical danger, even if there's a problem with some of your paperwork, I can't tell you to not... The number one priority is if you're dealing
right.
with it, you got to go protect yourself. So what does this add to that? It's disgusting.
Not to mention, if you're aware that a crime has been committed, do you want to go report right. it? Are you
That's
aware
out
of...
the window. That's out the window. I mean, oh. if you talk, of course you're going to look the other way on every... Why would you even think about reporting something now?
You're a nanny and you are aware that one of the children's being abused by... a parent or something? Are you going to go to the officials now and tell? Of course not.
No, I wonder what the priority of this administration is, the nanny or the abusive parents. There might be some empathy for the abusive parent contingent in this administration.
Morale amongst our agents and officers has increased exponentially since the signing of the orders. The biggest change was the erasing of the Obama administration's hierarchy of priorities, which forced agents to concentrate on deporting gang members and other violent and serious criminals and mostly leave everyone else alone. Officials in Washington said that shift and the new enthusiasm that's come with it seems to have encouraged pro-Trump political comments and banter that struck officials as brazen or gung-ho, like remarks about their jobs being fun. Those who take a less of a hard line on unauthorized immigrants feel silenced, the official said. And, you know, if you're one of those a-holes who contend that, well, they're illegal, the law is the law, you should also know that it's civil crime when you come in here without documentation, as opposed to... you know, basically like a traffic ticket. But you should also be aware that unless ICE is going to get a huge bump in their budget, understand that when they go after the moms, when they go after the law-abiding citizens, but for a ticket that they got, when they go after these people, they're not going after those violent criminals. And now they don't have to. When they see two potential people they can go after, they're going to go after the one who's going to represent the least amount of threat to them and the most amount of threat to the community.
And also, and I'm not... Of course, this isn't all ICE agents, but there are stories relating to this as well. I mean, who are the types of people that could pay a bribe to an ICE agent, as an example, to have them look the other way to begin with.
Bystanders are now being taken in if they're suspected to be undocumented, even if they've committed no crime, known within the agency as collateral arrests. While these arrests occurred under the Obama administration, they were officially discouraged, to the frustration of many agents. Which part of illegal don't people understand? An agent in Arizona asked. Oh, my God. On Thursday, L.A. basically asked ICE agents to stop referring to themselves as police, because when they knock on the door and they say it's the police, now anybody who's undocumented is not going to open the door. This is the problem. And here's a heartwarming tale of one of those people who have committed a felony getting arrested in West Frankfort, Illinois. This is also from the Times. A guy named Juan Carlos Hernandez Pacheco. He's been the manager of La Fiesta. It's a Mexican restaurant. This is a city of 8,000 people. He's been the manager there for 10 years. People around the town tell stories about Mr. Hernandez. Like when the fire department was battling a 2-alarm blaze, he showed up with meals for the firefighters. How he hosted a law enforcement appreciation day at the restaurant last summer. How he took part in about every community committee or charity effort, the Rotary Club, cancer fundraisers, cleanup days, scholarships for the high school sports team. He's 38 years old. In 2007, he had a DUI conviction. Two DUI convictions in 2007. 38 years old, on February 9th, he was arrested by federal immigration agents near his home, taken to a detention facility in Missouri. He's still in custody, but don't say where or what for. He has three kids. The oldest is six, a wife who is an American citizen as of late last year. Friends of his say he crossed into the United States from Mexico in the late 90s and started but never completed his effort to legalize his status. Tom Jordan, the mayor of West Frankfort, wrote that Mr. Hernandez was a great asset to the city who doesn't ask for anything in return. The fire chief described him as a man of great character. Lori Barron from Lori's Hair Affairs, a beauty salon. I think people need to do things the right way, follow the rules, and obey the laws, and I firmly believe in that. But in the case of Carlos, I think he may have done more for the people here than this place has ever given him. I think it's absolutely terrible he could be taken away. Richard Goldlich, athletic director at the Frankfort Community High School, wrote, "As a grandson of immigrants, I'm all for immigration reform. But this time you've arrested a good man that should be as a role model for other immigrants." This county backed Donald Trump with 70% of the vote. "I knew he was Mexican, but he's just been here for so long, he's just one of us," said Deborah Johnson, a resident. She said she saw a distinction between people who come over and use the system and people who actually come and help. Now, we know that undocumented immigrants pay more into the system than they take out. I mean, maybe if enough people get deported that Donald Trump supporters know, maybe there'll be a change. But this is going to increase. And people at one point are going to have to, I don't know. There's going to have to end up being, and I, you know, there's already obviously a lot of organizations that are starting to work with this. But it's going to become incumbent upon more and more people who are not involved in this issue to help people like this. There are people who are trying, people are trying to now sneak into Canada from here. It's insane. All right, we're going to take a break. go into the fun half. In the fun half, we'll try and have a little more fun.
Oh, really? Shall we be having fun? My father, Paul.
I've been listening to Gorka's book on tape.
He does the
and this man who was an architect. I mean, I feel like I want to take like 4 months off and just go to Hungary and track down this
story. Become a Gorkologist?
Yes. I mean, I'm only about halfway through the book. I'm listening. He doesn't narrate it. He only narrates the introduction.
The self-serving one about how my father was a great man and clearly that means I'm not a Nazi. My father, who hunted Jews with great abandon, couldn't be more further than a Nazi than anyone else.
There is a weird emphasis about his dad organizing with other Christian youth. Like I get it. There may not be Jews around in Hungary because
of the great work that my father and other Christian youth did.
But so I'm trying to get through this. So far, it's all been a revisionist history of the Iraq War. They made a tactical mistake. Obviously, they shouldn't have gone there if there wasn't weapons of mass destruction. But I mean, I'll tell you something. You listen to a book like this and you think, why haven't I written a book? I mean, I did write a book, but yeah, I mean, like the reason why I'm not writing another book is like, God, man, I don't want to go through all that fucking research and just do all that work. And then you read this thing.
But it's
thing
like
and you're
every time that other show happens when you're like, this requires remarkably little show prep.
It's true.
This is great.
It's true.
I mean, like,
it's honestly like I feel like he just said, "Honey, I'm going to take the afternoon off to write this book. First thing, I need my dragon speak.
I will not be
audio program. And now I'm just going to spew what I've read in the Wall Street Journal."
Oh, that might be a stretch. How about a column from maybe USA Today?
Exactly.
Half of a Weekly Standard article. And
it's
just
totally
personal common sense about
Jews to write a book.
And Arab.
My three greatest assets for writing a book: Dragon Speak, USA Today, and my ability to grow a goatee.
And my beautiful pronunciation. I vow that I will not take to my PlayStation to murder one more hooker until I have finished my manifesto on defeating terror. It should take 3.5 unbroken hours, and I will be a top Republican foreign policy thinker.
SJW. I'm practicing my W's.
SJW. Beta cock. Beta cock. The alphas are back in town. Free exchange of ideas. Muscularity.
So I've got a bunch of Gorka stuff, but I know that we've got to dole this stuff out.
And by the way,
welcome to the next 4 years. I'm the only one in the administration not involved in the Russian deal.
Yeah, guess what? You know what?
I was on the Milo side of things.
And so I was able to give such good...
None of us at Breitbart got a piece of the Russian deal.
Ooh. Wait, did you hear yesterday Binder called in?
And, Matt Binder?
Matt Binder.
Oh, did he call and say, "I told you guys"?
You know, right. He's like, "I told you should have."
Could have been his dad.
No, Matt Binder called in to say, he goes, "I remember your debate with Gorka." And he does sound remarkably similar to Sargon of Akkad.
Oh, right.
And
maybe
it could be the same guy, totally. And then he said, and then he goes,
Sargon of Akkad is only one of my sock puppets.
And then he was like, he goes, it's such a niche impression. Like, what are you going to do with it? And Matt and I are like, neat, like this guy's gonna become Secretary of State. What are you talking about?
Gorka is sitting around there because he's worked it out. Like, I am the 78th person on the ladder of ascendancy.
No question.
But 75% of those people are already going to be out because of the Russian thing.
Yeah, this administration, probably the most people that are aware of their exact, like, where they fall in that.
Beta cock, beta cock, beta cock. Wah, beta cock, beta cock. And just, I'm sorry, I can't resist this. No difference whatsoever in terms of substance or sophistication or grounding of analysis between Gorka and Sam Harris. Sorry. Writings on Islam are actually literally the same.
Dude, he doesn't have my accent or my goatee, though.
But at the same time, I don't speak people into a hypnotic trance.
That's the only reason why I talk this way, is to make sure that the left doesn't fill the vacuum.
If I don't speak like this, then there will be other people who speak like this who don't take the war of ideas seriously.
Understand, when I took this job at the White House, I gave up all of my biannual drum retreats.
I just wanted to have a free and open exchange of ideas about life hacking to not be a beta cock. But they demanded I work on terrorism. He literally said in one of his profiles that the alpha males are back.
Yes.
Like, he literally said that. I mean, honestly, like, these guys, they all just right. Don't give you any subtext.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll also, you know, there's not a lot to preview for tonight. I mean, but... we will do that.
It's going to be great. There's going to be buildings. There's going to be a big-time military.
We weren't on top of it this time around, but in the future, we'll do these things live, and we'll Mystery Science 3000. I just can't quite get that far away from vacation so quickly. I can't bathe in it.
I might dismember the Inculture Barbie.
Kelly's going to a dark place, ladies and gentlemen. All right, take a quick break. Head into the fun half, 646-257-3920. Reminder, this show relies on its members. Your support keeps this show alive. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, as a way of saying thank you, we give you another hour, 2 hours of the show sometimes.
5 hours?
I don't know. And also, you get a commercial free on those days where we do have commercials. So you'd never know it if you were a member. All right, quick break. We'll be right back after this. Setting up a pace.